The Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love, Deborah Voith, and Lenora Brightmoon, three out of the broom closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each episode, they will help you create rituals, cast spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. And now, on with the show.
Hello.
Hello there.
And welcome to today's show. This is Deborah Voith, and I'm here with co-host Elvira Love and our magical announcer, Nagashiva.
Yes.
So today, as we tick past Samhain, we will be talking about three ritual forms: prepared, spontaneous, and ecstatic. And, you know, we're going to go into what does ritual form mean, what are the differences, and what are the similarities, and how do they often overlap. So I'm going to start out here with general, a basic definition of ritual. And so ritual is a set of actions or ceremony performed in a set traditional way, often with a symbolic meaning. So it might be a religious ritual or a social event. It might be a personal ritual or a repetitive behavior, such as a daily morning routine, or a specific way of celebrating a holiday. So ritual can be many things, but some of them are, with witches, most of them are a celebration of the changing seasons and the creation of a sacred space between realms. Others are a way of celebrating and working with the moon phases. And I feel that all rituals on some level are an act of creating, sort of like creating a microcosm of the universe with you standing at the center of it all and communing with the divine and other powers. The circle within a ritual creates a powerful space to build power, work magic, and perform divinations, and also communicate with spirit. So some of the general characteristics of a ritual is that these ceremonies usually involve special gestures and words, and sometimes reciting traditional texts. And they might include, you know, special editions of songs or dances or processions. And often certain special objects might be used. And so the symbolic meaning is that rituals often have a deeper symbolic or cultural significance beyond the actions themselves. And there is usually some sort of a fixed order. Usually, the actions are usually performed like in a specific or consistent way. Sometimes they can be repetitive, or sometimes they can be religious, or like Wicca or other religions, or sometimes a ritual can even be something as simple as practices like a family's weekly dinner tradition or a morning meditation. But ritual can really be seen as a symbol of one's beliefs and values and can serve like many, many different purposes. So I want to just say a quick thing about defining like prepared, spontaneous, and ecstatic before I turn it over to Elvira. So if thinking about prepared, what prepared means to me is like to have something ready in advance or beforehand, so that prepared rituals are ones that are already planned and written out beforehand. And so I think that really plays into the whole idea of having and knowing your intention. So the words and activities might follow a pre-planned outline, and preparation of a ritual gives it structure and also sets things in motion. And so I think the power in ritual is that many believe when you're talking about a prepared ritual is that the use of the same words and the same gestures over time builds power within the words and the gestures being used, so that every time you use a prepared ritual, you build and increase the power contained in the words and the actions. So when I think about spontaneous, you know, to me, spontaneous means taking an action on a sudden and natural impulse. And so a spontaneous ritual would be fueled by inspiration. The words and the gestures used would be more a product of inspiration rather than being so much pre-planned. And so spontaneous rituals might be fueled by inspiration, by trance, or by any type of like a deeper sensing. And then if I just mentioned ecstatic, you know, the word ecstatic means being in a state of total upliftment and transcendence. And it may be joy, happiness, or it may involve like a mystical or a spiritual purpose. And so ecstatic rituals is a practice intended to induce an altered state of consciousness through various techniques. And so sometimes this might happen by doing these planned techniques, or the ecstatic state might happen just spontaneously. And so some rituals use methods like drumming, dancing, chanting, or specific body postures to achieve a temporary state of ecstasy. And that's where, you know, a person can feel transcended from their normal self, you know, and this often really has us come into a very spiritual or creative space, or it can be a very healing experience. And so that's some of my thoughts, just kind of generally going over like what a basic ritual is and what, you know, very simply defining like prepared, spontaneous, and ecstatic. But now I'd like to just turn it over to you, Elvira. What are some of your thoughts on that?
Basically, when I think of prepared, you know, it's formal, kind of like the esoteric orders like Golden Dawn, where there's long information and they speak with, you know, great eloquence, and they add a lot of that. Now that is the higher you know, like the most formal in my idea. But then again, you know, having structure, drawing, you know, having a script of what we want to say, maybe not as itemized, you know, required tools and actions. That kind of gives me the feeling of what a prepared ritual is. And of course, a lot of those are done for the Sabbath, the Wheel of the Year celebrations, or life rites, you know, hand fastings and wickening. And I just, you know, I think of it as a process and much more, you know, itemized. And there are variations. I think in prepared and spontaneous and even ecstatic, there are variations from high to the lower point of it. And that, I think, once you get to the lower part of prepared, you hit spontaneous. But to me, spontaneous is more like, and that's it. I'm outside, and I feel the need and the desire to connect. We'll talk about the wind, since you've got a lot of wind going on up there. The wind, and I will get into a space, and I will, maybe I don't have all my tools, but I use my finger, and, you know, or I find a twig or something to be, you know, my wand. And to me, that really is what I see spontaneous. It's like something calls and you do this. And when I did my vision quest at one point, they had us, you know, in the group I was going through my education, we went out and we had nothing. I mean, we had obviously something to sit on and, you know, this was it. And it was calling from within or feeling that which is outside being connected to, especially when, like, when I was near an ocean, it would be, I'd go to the ocean and I would walk and I would write things in the sand that I felt I needed to. And then the waves would take it out. Like I would make requests or I wish to let go of things or something. And that to me represented spontaneous. There was a focus, but it involved certain things that were very impromptu and at the moment. And, you know, as far as ecstatic is concerned, I really see that more as, well, obviously, when you do a lot of drumming and a lot of chanting and things where there's a consistent, like a repetition of consistent energy being worked on. And we're not, you know, we can say, you know, we can have, you know, certain kinds of teas or certain incense, you know, things that are that can bring that feeling. But ecstatic means that you totally are in that and feeling, and it takes you to the door of where you're, the realm that you're opening up. And I know there are different ways to talk about, you know, the realms and the involvement with quieting the logical mind to get into this deeper and finer vibration that stops, you know, we are stopped by our logical mind a lot of times to get that information and find out what it is, you know, the what is it. So I think those are different, you know, just thumbnail sketches of what I feel those three areas are. And even when we talked briefly before our show, I found that it was more about the area of, they blur. They kind of go from prepared and then spontaneous and then ecstatic. But when you finally get to that lower part, more you know, the non-structured part, less structure, they start to come, there's like that line blurs and you then suddenly find yourself in spontaneous, or suddenly there's this ecstatic feeling that takes you to the level. And I really find that is they're all created from the same situation. It's just energy flow from, you know, I kind of see one sphere and then that sphere touches another sphere and it touches another sphere. And those are all like, you know, little areas from prepared to spontaneous to ecstatic.
Sure. Oh, that makes a lot of sense. So with this ecstatic ritual, it might be planned or it might be spontaneous, but I think the goal is really like to shift your consciousness to achieve that state of ecstasy. And I actually looked that up, which is a Greek word, ecstasy, and it means to stand outside oneself, you know. And when, I know, yeah, I was kind of like, oh, also when I read that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that that feeling is just, you know, very spiritual, and often, you know, creates like a feeling of unity with everything around you, and really connects you, you know, with the spiritual world. And so I feel like that ecstasy, meaning to stand outside oneself, is really quite accurate, you know.
yes, definitely. It's got, and I think in some ways that's a refreshing of that word and the meaning as we're talking, because mm-hmm. you and I both know ecstasy is been taken into so many realms. Some of them, you know, we don't need to go into because they're a little darker, but that mm-hmm. particular word and how it gets used in culture has shifted so much that when you say this, I'm like, oh yes. Mm-hmm. Because it has, yes, I get you want, you know, again, we're looking at it from a particular point of view to gain access to the spiritual higher realm or a finer vibration or whatever we want to call it as an identification. And it's for the purposes of, at least for me, I'll have to speak personally, it's for enlarging and seeing the bigger picture. It's like wanting to get to the top of the mountain to look at everything in this big way and then decide, now I'll go back down the mountain into my village or whatever. And, you know, because we want to find that way of seeing that expansion, because it honestly, it makes you humble. You know, when you think about it, it's like, I am part of this, but look at how beautiful and big this is, and then come down. And doing spontaneous and prepared rituals get us to that place in a different way than, say, the ecstatic way.
Right, right. Yeah, it's totally about transcendence. And lots of times it can be about healing or just tapping into the well of creativity within you. But I think it really is, I think all ritual is about expressing your inner journey in mm-hmm. an external way. And mm-hmm. So depending on where you're at and what's going on with you, the whole thing of, you know, ecstatic ritual can mean and be different things for different people.
Yes.
You know, some might find it as a way of actually, you know, connecting with their community. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned some of your rituals that it sounds like those were solitary rituals where you were reaching that that ecstatic point of connection. And that, you know, so that's kind of interesting. Sometimes I think that rituals can be set up so that as a group, you might possibly induce the, you know, that transcendence or that ecstasy within the ritual. And, you know, it's something I think if you're in a group, it's something you can shoot for and you might not always get it.
Yes.
In depending, you know, everybody is different and everybody might journey into that in a different way.
True. I know when I was working in a small coven, we would do it as more of a prepared, but it was that one interesting area between prepared and spontaneous, because within the prepared, we left room for that particular spontaneous aspect to come in. And, you know, we would do the casting, you know, we would take and ward off the energies and then cast the circle and call the quarters and call the goddess that we were working with. And then, start to commune. Sometimes it was with a scrying board. Sometimes it was with getting into a quiet state and channeling in information, or going into an inner plane and then coming out and sharing that process. But it, and then of course it was, you know, the cakes and ale and the, you know, the calling, sure. Closing the circle, calling directions, letting go, da da da, all of that. And with that, it was a combination of things that we utilized.
I love all of the things that you were covering right there. But, you know, I think for people that are kind of beginning or starting out, I just wanted to add, in our first half, that one of the best ways to learn how to perform ritual, whether it's solitary or done in a group, is to read and study the rituals of those who have done them before and kind of deconstruct them. Mm-hmm. And so you can kind of separate and examine the meaning of each part of a ritual and then put it back together to see how it flows. And you can look at the words and ask yourself, do these words express the best meaning for me? Mm-hmm. And if not, you can, ask yourself which words would be more meaningful to you and then write those down. And then little by little, keep working at it. And soon you will have your own personalized ritual. And another thing I just wanted to mention is if you are able to go out in your community and watch others put on rituals, get out there and do it. Just observe how others create meaning and perform their rituals, because you might be so inspired that you start to want to create your own ritual right away.
Right.
Or the opposite could happen, and so I've observed numerous rituals over the years, and some were so beautiful and expressive, and while others were not so much. And so we can learn from both, and just, but it is good to get out there and just to see what others are doing with that.
It's interesting. One of the things I noticed was I went into a drumming circle, and I connected with this woman, and her name was Sedona Cahill, and she did drumming circles. And eventually, we wound up taking those drumming circles into one of the women's prison in the area of Northern California, and it was interesting. Because, of course, going into structure of that environment, but just you, and you couldn't talk to them. You had, there were certain requirements to do something like that and touch them, things like that, which in a lot of our own rituals that we do those kinds of things, there's a certain amount of communion. But it was to watch the change and to watch these women experience it and flow with it is, again, what you were saying, go out in community and see the rituals. Well, something of this nature, I got to see it in a different form, not necessarily going into my community, but taking it into this other community and watching how it uplifted and worked with these women in such a way that I was really grateful to be able to be a part of it for the time that we were doing it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Being able to take something like that to someone that wouldn't have access. Mm-hmm. And just, especially in those situations, that's very cool.
And I don't know, that would probably be kind of a borderline spontaneous ecstatic, because you use the drumming to gain the process. So it's not necessarily a totally ecstatic experience that you create, but it is something that will bring a certain that spontaneous experience into the physical realm for these women. So it was a really gratifying experience. And I remember that strongly because, I enjoyed doing that kind of energy, because to me, the drumming doesn't mean it's always the drum beat of the heart, but we use that a lot. It was, that process. So I don't know, I guess, again, creating ritual is a different way of putting things together. Sometimes you have a structure and you go, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have the circle set up. And especially when you're doing large groups, you want to be able to have a bit of more structure. And
I have a story about that. But
So
that's a good point.
Because of that, I mean, you know, when you're like 4 or 10, maybe in a one room area, it's got a different feel. But you know, the larger groups you do have, and I feel I never was part of Rosicrucians or any of the other, you know, groups, but I do know of people who have been, and you know, there's a certain amount of distancing when it gets super formal, unless it's, I mean, we tend to work a lot in circles, but that doesn't mean all ritual, you know, prepared rituals are in circle. I mean, a prepared ritual can be sitting in a room with the primary person, be it a, you know, a director of a particular religious experience or belief system, and creating an environment through prayer and the things that are their part of their format to the things that we do in circles and with, you know, the tools that we use.
I love that thought. And I want you to pause and hold on to that thought because it's now time for a quick break. And we will continue afterwards. Break us away, Nagashiba.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages. LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance that brings you the best in hoodoo, conjure, witchcraft, rootwork, new thought, spiritualism, and pagan ways. Our shows include the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, live on Sundays from 3 to 4:30 Pacific Time, the Crystal Silence League Hour, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, and the Now You Know Show. All these shows are available as audio podcasts via the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com. and at YouTube, where we make daily video uploads. Please like and subscribe at youtube.com/LuckyMojoCurioCo. Sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, makers of handcrafted spiritual supplies and offering the widest selection of magical herbs and roots, plus hundreds of free web pages filled with spellcasting tips and fortune-telling techniques. Our shop is located in Forestville, California, and we sell retail and wholesale online at LuckyMojo.com.
Right. So we are back on the other side of our break, and I would love for you to continue with where you were going, Elvira.
Sure. No problem. You know, it's interesting because one, I know many people that I have as friends and people that I know, associates. We've all gone into different structured, I'm quoting it, air quotes, religious connections of, you know, ceremonies and sermons, rituals, whatever you're going to call it for whatever tradition. And I found it fascinating that as I have grown in the practice of Wicca, witchcraft, you know, whatever we're going to call what we do, we have so many different terms that we can use at any given time. I actually began to see how that gets created. I mean, through the hymns, through the things, through the ways, the psalms, the different things that are utilized, and the fact that you have a structure you go into, and, you know, be it a cathedral, a church, a synagogue, any one of the different temples, and you go into that, and then they start creating the sacred space even more, because you're in a specific sacred space. But for the ceremony that you're doing, the time that you're there, they create this with the different ways they structure how mm-hmm. they guide the different individuals that are there through an experience, a religious experience, a spiritual experience. And mm-hmm. I see it as, because even when I was in the Center for Spiritual Living, which used to be called the Church of Religious Science, and how that was, a little less formal, but still had structure. And then, going into the Wiccan tradition and the way we sit in circle, be it one large, huge circle or concentric circles or however we're doing it, and we do these things, we have a leader, or maybe we have individuals that are kind of a group that acts as a leadership, and they open this, they create the environment and they go through these things. And sometimes there's things to do that they create an experience for us to have. And it's similar. It's for us in that moment in time. And I could see that as much in all these others. Now, whether I don't want to say one is better than the other, quite frankly. I just see the common ground of finding a way to create a sacred environment and thus create an experience that you as an individual can go in and experience. I feel the Wiccan way is much more personal. We get involved in some way. Yes, we may sit in circle and there may be a high priestess or a high priest or someone, but we are very tactile by sitting there and then doing whatever it is that we're doing, whether it's, we're saying we're speaking something we want to speak, we chant, we do. It feels more inclusive rather than I'm a member of an audience watching something. But I mm-hmm. think that's also because maybe I don't have the longevity in the particular tradition. So it is personal to someone who has been in it longer or fully immersed in it. So mm-hmm. I, without judgment, I just say I find this way, for me, more personal and more engaging. But I also can see how it can be for others the same way with a different lens.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Well, I think that, my background in ritual is, I would say, I've done a lot of rituals that are just with myself. I've done a lot of rituals for the community, especially back when I had my shop. But then in the recent years when I was affiliated with another shop and we would do different events and stuff, I would put on rituals. I think the last one I did was for a ritual for Hecate over at Altered State when they were still there. But I would say, though, the majority of rituals I've done have been with my family, my sisters, my nieces, my daughters. And those, I mean, they all have taken on a lot of meaning for me. And so I haven't been like so like rigidly within one system, I guess I would say. But, you know, I think that with any ritual, you kind of need to have a beginning, a middle, and an mm-hmm. end. And, mm-hmm. and start out with an intention so that you know, the intention is your essence. And it's what drives the core reason for creating or for holding a ritual. Even if it's something that you're doing in a solitary manner, it's something that you're doing by yourself. And so your intention will fuel the ingredients used in the ritual that you cook up.
Yes. You know, before,
like a ceremony of your intention within like the action and within the symbolism. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I think before penning your own ritual, you first have to decide what you want the ritual to symbolize and accomplish. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, whether it'll be like a seasonal ritual or a Sabbath or, you know, some way to celebrate an aspect of the wheel of the year, or will it be a lunar a ritual, you know, utilizing the energy of a full or dark moon.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it can be a teaching ritual. I know that the way that I would do community ritual is I would word things differently than I would if I was just doing the ritual with people I had done ritual with before, because mm-hmm. I would be aware that there would be some people in that circle that didn't know why we were doing the things we were doing. And so I would usually kind of preface things with, you know, now, you know, we are pulling up a circle of energy because of, you know, we are drawing this energetic boundary to contain our energy and mm-hmm. to keep unwanted energy. And, you know, so I guess what I'm saying is it's just, you know, just intention is huge, I think. And just, mm-hmm. And knowing that ritual is basically an externalization of your inner self, your mm-hmm. inner journey, I would say. And so after that, I think I would look at like what type of ambiance or what type of mood would you want to it, you know? And so it's good to look at the symbolism that you will use. You might want to incorporate traditional poems or readings, or you might want to just use your own words. Mm-hmm. So I think that once people get more used to doing ritual and knowing what ritual is, then it can be used in so many different ways.
Right.
And really, I think that the prepared, the spontaneous, and the ecstatic usually flow all, you know, within each other.
Yes.
When you are able to do that in a way where you can get there. And so, you know, there's decisions to be made, like where are you going to do the ritual? You know, are you going to do it outside? Or is it an indoor ritual? Whether it's nature focused or, you know, or maybe you're using an inner altar. And so I guess it's good to envision where you're going to do your ritual. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, like I would say, like in your case, where you were going into the prisons and doing a drumming ritual, you really had to kind of be very flexible because you didn't know what to expect or what the accommodations would be with something like that.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Yeah. But I think that I liked your description of those solitary rituals that you would do, like on the beach, where you're just walking along and you might write some words in the sand. Because lots of times, you know, ritual can be about either attracting something or letting something go. You know, so I can just imagine writing words in the sand and letting the water, you know, flow over them and take them away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, this a place you, you know, okay, we do walks in the woods or we do walks in parks and we find things, a feather, a rock, you know, a leaf. We're mm-hmm. out at the beach. We find shells. We, you know, and I found that when that kind of experience happens, you start mm-hmm. connecting and creating at the same time. And I, you mm-hmm. know, I think that to me is really the essence of, I mean, I know there's reasons for structures and rituals that have certain things you say at certain times in certain ways, but a bulk of our life is spent coming and going from places, whether it's work or different locations or situations. And there may be a structure we're trying to, we are in, but there's always a flow within that structure that we have to be conscious of and work with. And I think yeah. that becomes as much of a, and I'm not saying this in a negative way, a ritual, because as much as we do things, we can create that feeling of a higher vibrational experience, even in a more mundane environment. Nature mm-hmm. and the environments where the elements are raw and there are wonderful.
Oh, but, yeah.
I mean, you're sitting in the middle of 30-mile-an-hour winds that are around you. And, as mm-hmm. it, you know, maybe frustrating in some ways, it's awe-inspiring in another. Mm-hmm. And I love that. But then there are times when even doing certain things that you have to do in environments that aren't spiritual, quote unquote, mm-hmm. you can find that flow, create it from yourself and put it out there, maybe not in the way that you really, really, really want to, but in ways that can create that process. I know that in different instances, when I did work in a corporate environment, it was a little less structured than, you know, a big building with, you know, small cubicles, but mm-hmm. it still was a corporate environment. I had my desk and my computer, and because I was the events coordinator for the division, I was given a little more, you know, leeway to be creative, but they mm-hmm. knew, you know, you know, I did certain things when I was creating, or I did certain rituals. Like if I was getting to a point where I needed to get some inspiration and I was feeling hampered or frustrated, mm-hmm. I would literally take my break. And they got mm-hmm. used to me doing this with my headset on. And at that time, of course, we had CDs. So put my CD player, and I literally went out in the parking lot and I'd walk. And I, the wind or the rain, I didn't care. I would walk and I would walk in the circle and I would do it, you know, a few times while I had it, because what I was doing was creating a ritual to open the door for me to find the creativity. And that was the best way I could do it within the structure of where I was working.
I love that. I love that. You know,
they definitely thought I was strange for sure.
No, I mean, I've done things like that too, when I need to get into that space where ideas flow, you know, where I can get some inspiration without a bunch of external distraction. But mm-hmm. kind of on the flip side of that, though, is that so we can have ritual with ourselves, which can be, I think, the easiest way to be spontaneous or even ecstatic. But something else that I have like a little story where I think it's really important to, like, if you are going to plan like a community ritual, or you're going to have something going on where there's many participants there, you have to really, I think that's where you want to have those spaces within the ritual where people are able to be spontaneous. And able to get, you know, reach into a higher level. But The other thing, though, is that you need to also keep in mind that you're working with a lot of people, and how are you going to do that? I had a couple of very dear friends who did one of their first rituals with a very large group. You know, it was a Samhain ritual where they and they were really, really wanting it to be more inspirational and symbolic and stuff like that. So I could appreciate that. So there was less structure and tons of spontaneity. But there was little planning done on the timing. And so the ritual, it was beautiful, but it went on and on for like nearly 3 hours.
Ooh.
I don't know about everybody else, but my attention span really only lasts about an hour.
Exactly.
So, you know, so I thought that their energy was beautiful, and I really, really appreciated the what they did, you know, because it was a very, had a lot of meaning and a lot of inspiration within that ritual. But then on the other hand, when you are working with a large group of people, you have to kind of keep in mind, like when I would do a whole ritual for a large number of people, I would think of things that would be meaningful for them to do, but would take up not so much time. Like I wouldn't hand the microphone and go around to, you know, 50 people and have each of them, you know, speak their heart out.
Right.
What I would do is maybe I would have a huge cauldron, a huge pot filled with sand, and each of them would light like a chime candle or a spell candle with their intention of whatever the ritual was, and place it in the cauldron of sand. Wow. And so, you know, and that's something that doesn't take so long to do as maybe passing the mic, where, you know, and where it's an active thing where people are doing that. And then you can also add, you know, in other layers of like, you know, drumming or dancing or chanting. That can all, everybody's doing it at the same time, and it really kind of can elevate you into a different state, even when you have a bunch of people there with you. And especially, right. You know, depending on the group, especially if you have a bunch of people there with you. So, yeah, so there's always, you know, a lot of little different things to keep in mind when you're, you know, working with other people or not, you know, maybe just doing it with yourself can be some of the most beautiful rituals.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So.
So I think we're kind of coming to the end. So any closing thoughts, Elvira?
No, I think I didn't know. Do you think you have time to discuss?
Oh. Yes. Okay. Yes. I was going to, at the end here, I almost forgot. So for anybody out there who is interested in making, like, some people will do a ritual bath before, ritual, or they might, you know, prepare some type of oil, that's like their special ritual oil, or they might make some incense. And so, if you can, I'm just going to give a basic recipe for my witch's ritual oil. Is that I use a carrier oil, you know, so this can be, you know, almond oil, coconut, you know, fractionated coconut oil. Those two are my favorite carrier oils. And then what I add is, and it's just, I don't measure it. So the ingredient listed first is probably the one that has the most in it. So I'll put in my carrier oil, I'll put some sandalwood. I'll put some, sandalwood is very meditative. Myrrh for drawing spirits. Rosemary is to honor the dead. Jasmine is a very good for tapping into the psychic. Bay for clarity, and then I'll put a little bit of clove for banishing any negativity. I'll also add some dried herbs like jasmine, rosemary, mugwort, calendula, and bay. And so you don't need all of those items to make a good ritual oil. I'm just telling you the ones that I use. And if you don't have like a certain oil, you can always add a little bit of the dried herb. And so once you make the oil though, and you have that set, it's really easy to make a ritual bath. You just get some salt or Epsom salt, maybe add a little bit of herbs to it, but you can sprinkle some of your witch's ritual oil on the salt or the Epsom salt and use that in your tub. For making an incense, I would say that's not too hard to do either. So you have your herbs that you would normally use. So what I do is some people are more using down to earth, I guess, where they'll use a mortar and pestle. And I'll do that sometimes, but if I'm in a hurry, I've got like this old coffee grinder that's electric, and I'll put my herbs in there and grind them up. And so all you need to do for the incense is just to make a self lighting incense. All you need is some very fine, like untreated, no chemicals, sawdust. So I prefer maple or pine, but then again, I do spend a lot of time in the woods here. And then I use 1/3 part of yellow sandalwood powder and 1/3 part of finely ground and powdered herbs. And then I put like 2 to 3 tablespoons of saltpeter, depending, I would say, per cup of mixture. And then I add my witch's ritual oil to that and mix it and blend it until it's like slightly moist. And then the easy way to use that incense is just to pinch it up in your fingers and put it on top of, I put in my cauldron on top of some sand and just pinch it into a little cone and then light it. Once you have the ingredients for your ritual oil, you can easily make that also into a bath or also an incense to use it during your rituals. And I think that having that little extra touch of, maybe do a little research on what each herb is used for magically, and then combine those into your ritual oil and bath and incense. And it just, it's kind of like the frosting on the cake.
Truly good. Truly good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well. So, yeah, I think it's about that time.
Yes, it is.
Any last stuff? Okay. So what we're going to do is, I'm going to wrap up with some contact information for both of us. And so for readings or root work, I cannot talk today. I think I'm having a stroke or something.
No, cancel, erase.
So for readings or root work, find Elvira and I on Hoodoo Psychics and on AIR, the Association of Independent Readers and Root Work. You can also find Elvira online for readings at www.elvira.com, and you can also find her at www.milk-and-honey.com. And you can find me, Deborah Voigt, on my website for mediumship, tarot readings, spell casting, root work at www.bewitchingbee.com. So I guess that this wraps up tonight's show. Remind me, Elvira, the next show that will be with Elvira and Lenora. And what is it going to be on?
It's going to be on Pele.
Oh,
the goddess Pele. Yeah.
Awesome. Oh, that sounds like that'll be a great show.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah. So Goodbye, everybody. And until next time, our magical friends, witch on, witch well, and witch wisely.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs on Thursdays and is available for download. Plus, we're uploading them weekly as YouTube videos. Questions or comments on this show, or ideas for upcoming shows, can be sent to our website at witchpriestessandcauldron.com. That's witchpriestessandcauldron.com. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be.